From the KCYX studios in Philo, California, you are listening to R-Waves, the monthly program dedicated to the creative sector of Mendocino County. I'm your host, Victor Palomino, and in today's program, we featured the Arts Calendar with the Willits Arts Center, a conversation with singer and songwriter Rita Hoskins, another conversation with Point Arena poet laureate Blake Moore, and we end the program with Eddie Heil interviews with the Willits Community Theater and Ukiah Players Theater. First, singer and songwriter Rita Hoskins.
My name is Rita Corrine Hosking, and I'm a singer, songwriter, musician, teacher, artsy, fartsy person. I have been writing my own songs and sort of touring behind them for almost 20 years now. And before that, I was a teacher. I taught U.S. history mostly at the junior high level for about 12 years. And music became something I just couldn't just leave at home when I went to work. So I realized I needed to choose one or the other. I miss teaching, but it's been a great choice to do music for me and my family. It's brought us a lot of really enriching experiences. I write and sing country folk music, I call it. So it's basically folk music with a little twang, because I grew up with listening to traditional country music as a kid. That's what my dad mostly listened to. And I perform around. I perform a lot with my husband, Sean Fee, and you hear him on the new release. He sings one of the songs and he plays on almost all the cuts too. He plays dobro, banjo, and guitar.
That's so interesting. That change from history teacher to musician. It's like a completely different audiences, completely different venues.
And I always considered myself quite an introvert. You know, I religious studies degree, and I was interested in history and anthropology and shy. But then I ended up getting a teaching credential mostly because I couldn't figure out what else to do. Mm-hmm. And then I sort of found a great element that I enjoyed, getting up and working with groups and working with people and telling stories. I think the teaching actually helped become a better performer.
You produce a series of what is called public service songs, and this is part of a grant that you got by the California Arts Council and also the California Creative Corps. And so tell me a little bit about this. How did you came out with the idea of creating and writing songs as PSAs?
Well, I heard about this grant going around in 2022. And it was described as kind of a WPA style grant, put artists back to work after the pandemic, because like all the other touring musicians, we lost all our work for at least a year. So that piqued my interest, but it seemed like it was maybe addressing more visual art, and I wasn't sure about music. The program had certain goals that basically the state wanted to employ artists to further some of the messages that they want to educate people on or reach out with. So those goals had to do with things like public health, emergency preparedness, relief and recovery, energy conservation, water conservation, climate change mitigation, those kinds of things. And the idea was also to reach particularly vulnerable or underserved populations in the state. The organization I apply to, as you said, is called the Upstate California Creative Art, and that's for the California Arts Council. They manage the most 19 northern counties in Northern California. So I proposed these public service songs, as you say. I thought back to my childhood. There was something called Schoolhouse Rock that was on television for Saturday morning cartoons. Brilliant songs about things that kids needed to learn, like how the government works or grammar, you know. And to me, they were a genius invention because I could learn very well by melody. Like I could remember words if they had a melody. So I thought, well, why don't I try doing something like that? And I'll make them really short, catchy, make them fun, put a little humor in, and hope that they can have a similar effect where people can pick up these messages and maybe remember them more.
So how was the process of making the songs? How was the process of recording the songs?
I had so much joy writing them because they reminded me of being a kid again. It's like a lot of kids, you make up songs about your family or your dog or your boys. And it felt like that. that was really fun. It was a lot of hard work, but it was also really fun. I used mostly musicians from the Nevada County area, and some of them I hadn't worked with before, and I used a brand new studio, all mostly brand new professionals that I was working with, and that was stipulated in the grant as well, that they wanted to see more artists working with different artists they hadn't worked with, which was really cool. So I also was excited about making it sound even more country and using a pedal steel guitar player. So there's this guy, Joe Ibarra, who was inducted into the Western Swing Hall of Fame in the Sacramento chapter. And he's this amazing pedal steel player. He's on there. Lynn Hirant, who's a fabulous fiddler. She had just turned 18, and she's in a band called Broken Compass that is just going crazy right now. And Sean Feeder on dobro, banjo, and guitar. He sings this song that I wrote about, man, it sounds like he's leaving his wife or his girlfriend. Actually, he's leaving his gas guzzler car and he's getting an electric one. You find that out at the
It's
end.
I mean, my car is right now my longest relationship.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a relationship. So anyway, it was a lot of fun. We had a great recording it. And I'm so happy now to actually be able to share it with everyone. And we're sharing it for free. That's part also of the grant, is that you're not going to sell what you got paid to make, I mean,
Produce, yeah.
at least during the grant period. And also, it's just awesome because we can share it around. The catch to that is it can't go on Spotify or Apple Music or anything like that, even though it might only be 0.001 cent per stream or something. So it's for free on website, it's for free on Bandcamp, but most of all, the target I wanted to use here is radio, because radio is able to reach populations over the state, and it's also the heart of the communities. Community radio stations, local low power stations, college stations, internet stations, but especially community radio stations like KZYS. They're the heart of the community, and they're often the voice during an emergency,
Yes,
right?
that's part of
Yeah.
our mission. At the end, how many songs do you record?
Six songs and a little a station ID. It's the first track. You know how on a lot of radio stations they go, you know, da da da, like they give you a little jingle with the call sign. So I just had a fantasy that I wanted to make one for my record that people could play before the tunes if they want, just to let you know this is a country radio tune. And so that I call that the station ID. That and six songs, yeah.
Okay. And when are they going to be available?
They are available as we speak. That's at ritahosking.com or at Bandcamp, if you use Bandcamp. My page, Rita Hosking on Bandcamp, and available on the radio. And I'm going to start putting out videos on YouTube.
Rita, do you have a favorite, song
Favorites.
from all the six songs?
They're all really fun. I think the one that I have the most fun singing is the last one. It's called Net Zero Heroes. It's about all the tools we have at our disposal to help us on the path to net zero energy consumption. And it's kind of, I call it like a country hip hop song. It's pretty fun.
Well, Rita, thank you so much for talking with the to KCYX, for having this public radio country songs PSAs available for our community. Is there anything else you want to add before we end the conversation?
I just want to put a big plug in KZYX and community radio. You guys are fulfilling a great service in the community. And I want to thank listeners who support the radio and wish you all the best of wellness.
The greenhouse gases that we produce need to be in balance with how much we remove. We got a cool crew on Net Zero Avenue. Introduce yourselves, tell us what you do. Hey, I'm a slow cooker, or induction stove, or an instant pot for your sweet potatoes. There's no special metric, just make it electric. Plant-based foods in there, we're perfected. I'm an LED bulb and my shtick is lit. You can stick me anywhere, there's an incandescent.
You are listening to R Waves. Next, Point Arena, Poet Laurier, Blake Moore. Blake, thank you so much for coming to R Waves.
It's so nice to be here.
Tell me a little bit about you as an artist.
I do a lot of different arts. Mm-hmm. So I am a writer first. I think I came to art through poetry. That's my primary artistic expression. But I also like to paint. You know, I have poetry art cars. I usually, when I paint, structures or murals kind of things. I love to do mosaic art. I do graphic design. I play a theremin. I do a little bit of everything. And now that I'm getting older, all those little bits of everything, I'm actually starting to get more skilled at everything. I like to call myself a Renaissance woman. Yeah. I think that the artists of the Renaissance time were the ones in the printing press, kind of opened the door for people to create a new kind of life.
Exactly. And take it from the dark ages to like a new beginning.
Exactly. And so the arts, I think of myself as one of those artists, like a healing artist, that the arts that I bring forth are to help us to, I guess, evolve into the next expression of our human becoming.
Yeah. You are currently the Point Arena Poet Laurier.
Uh-huh.
So tell me, how did that happen?
Well, I mean, I think Point Arena is a pretty small town, and I have been pretty involved in just poetry in this the county, but also in this area. I've been running a poetry and jazz series since 2002. And we're poets and writers sponsored, and we have local musicians who play with our local poets, and then we bring in an outside poet because we're sponsored by Poets and Writers, so we can pay somebody to come make the trek all the way to Point Arena. People are always like, wow, this was so hard, but we love it. And so that has been every month has been going on. And if I'm not here, Kit Bliss Jones, or in the past Janet DeBar, and other people will step in as MC. But it's been a monthly event that I've been part of in this area since 2002. Mm. It was started by Fiona Perkins and Janet DeBar and Andrea Penn in 96. Mm-hmm. And when I first came to town in 97, I joined in and was going to their readings. They were at the old library in Point Arena. And I don't know, there was something about those women and their love for poetry. I felt like I got a mantle passed on to me. And Fiona Perkins was the lifetime poet laureate of Point Arena. Before she died, I came to her house. They invited me over, her and her husband Richard, and she gave me a bunch of poetry books. And then she kind of went in a box and she said, "This is for you." And she had this pink sash with the, you know, like the kind of the queen sash that mm-hmm. said Poet Laureate of Point Arena on it. She goes, "You're the next one." I was like, "I wanted it. Sure, I want to be Poet Laureate. That's a great name." But I didn't really, no one in the city heard that. And so no one knew anything about it. And then a few years ago, I don't know who it was, but I told somebody that story and they told somebody else, like, we need to make this happen. Mm. And so I think it was something that happened during COVID. And I think everybody was looking for good things to celebrate together. Mm-hmm. And even though my voice is somewhat, can be somewhat controversial, I don't always agree with everybody and they don't agree with me, mm-hmm. but I do think I project a love and a fairness. Mm-hmm. So I'm not interested in harming anyone with my ideas, and I'm more interested in genuine dialogue. And that's the role of a poet.
Yeah.
And I have had times when I've been asked to write a poem for, say, the 4th of July. And mm-hmm. I remember the first one after we kind of came back together, and I was asked, Blake, just be nice. So they know, like everyone knows. Yeah. Like, just go easy on us, Blake. So I know that that's this kind of fun role that you have as a poet. Yeah. It's like the court jester.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you can say the things that you're not supposed to say because you're saying them artfully and hopefully, you know, without too much rancor.
And you're not going to get beheaded by the king.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, not yet.
One of the reasons why we're talking is because you have a new book out.
Yeah, it's called Dystopia Unplugged. Mm-hmm. Please talk back. So I'm unplugging dystopia this time, which is very Renaissance. And, you know, we have so much negative information coming into us all the time. And I would say this book is very beat.
Hmm.
It's a beat book
mm-hmm.
because, you know, in the I stand on the shoulders of the Beat Generation. And when I first came to San Francisco in the late 80s, I got befriended by some of the poets that were the last remnants of that. They called themselves the Baby Beats. And they really, and then even some of the old hippies says, oh my gosh, you're a hippie. And in those days, it wasn't cool to be a hippie, but they were like, no, you're really a hippie, you know? And then I learned about the digger movement. And then I understood that it wasn't all about a party. There was a genuine intellectual movement through writing and art that was working to continue to evolve the way we think.
Counterculture.
Yeah. And, you know, in that sense of truly like people who wanted to lead without followers and who wanted other leaders to be able to, how do we take our power back? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what this book is about. It's very much in the beat. It's a beat book, you know, in the sense where it's not, you don't necessarily pick it up and feel great. But I really have worked hard. It's 96 pages, and I have worked very hard to make sure there's no hate in it. There's challenge. There's questioning, but I've worked to take all the hate out. Can I read you one of the poems?
Please.
This poem is, it's called Forgiveness 101. It goes through kind of my challenges with how people treated each other on both sides during the pandemic, whether you chose to vaccinate or you didn't choose to vaccinate, what you did, what you didn't. It brought out the fear that we had. It created divisions in families and
cultural wars.
Just awful. Yeah. And I was shocked. And the intolerances, you know, like it's even happening now with the two sides of the parties. So I'm feeling all this hate. So I'm trying to find ways to talk about the hard stuff and let go of the hate. So this is one of the ways. And I think of poetry as the way I metabolize emotion. Forgiveness 101. Sometimes life kicks you in the guzzler, takes your love and twists it into an origami monster, stomping circles in the attic, wreaking havoc on the very floorboards of the foundation. The mind is a terrible thing to piss off. There is nowhere to run but to the heart. It does not want to hold grudges. Instead, it offers armfuls of daisies, candlelit courtyards and moonlight. It says, how can I help? Do you need anything? And gosh, some people must be very unhappy. Why else would they sick the county on you? Call you stupid during a board meeting? Determine you are unfit for the costume job with the social, activist, musical, comedic, political theater company you've had for over 20 years because you didn't get the shot that still doesn't work? Change is hard, but tyrannical change is torment. Not the expected torture, but the relentless wonder over the bureaucratic betrayers, their kindergarten tattle tactics, why nobody spoke directly to me, why they chose to embrace the institutions they spent decades parroting, why I was iced out of my own world, labeled a flat earther. Without intention, my groove deepens, making the step out of righteousness steeper than necessary. Revenge is sweet, but forgiveness is death-defying. The latter, the only chance for survival.
How do you feel now that the book is out? Have you had the opportunity to talk to people that have different points of view?
It's been really great. I've read, it's scary, you know, it's scary to put myself out there because I was so labeled and pushed out of a lot of circles for the choices that I made for myself. I didn't tell anyone what their choices should be. I just wanted to stay true to what I knew. And I've been doing, you know, I've been on a path for a very long time. And it's been interesting. I got a call from a friend, or a text. He texted me a cover of my book and I had no idea he'd bought it. And he just says, oh my God, I had no idea how close my heart was. This book is opening my heart. I am so grateful. And he's and then I have had a couple of readings where, you know, somebody has a very strong opinion that about, and they say something. There was a reader that we had that spoke, he asked a question and you felt the whole room freeze. And it was kind of this conspiratorial, like, I'm going to read this poem about this yucky person and we're all going to be okay with it. And everyone's like, oh no. And there was people that liked that yucky person. And you could see in the room wasn't only people like him. And so there was this moment and he went ahead with the poem. And then when it was my turn to read, I read a poem and I devoted it. I said, this goes to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that poem goes through a lot of the both sides and neither side, both sides, neither side. And at the end, he actually thanked me. And so those are the kinds of things that I know that we need to start finding positive ways, because it's not going to work by being political.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, my opinion is, but oh, I've got all this research and I've done this research. My research is better than research. Mm-hmm. My consensus science is. It's like we're exhausted and we're never going to get anywhere if we don't find safe ways to open the pressure valve.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what this book is intended to do. I do not want to have the yucky come down on me again. Like, I'm still coming out of some of the trauma that I experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having a hard time walking. Like, I'm still physically impaired by some of the ways that the emotions of it impacted me.
Mm-hmm. And you're not the only one. A lot of people are still digesting the pandemic and what happened. And the cultural situation that we have right now, it's not helping. So
no,
it's been very hard for everybody.
And that's what's so amazing is I have friends across the entire spectrum of belief. And if we have love in our hearts, we can do anything. And I think that it takes people being willing to be vulnerable like that. That vulnerability is so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But we're afraid we're going to fall apart if we're vulnerable, because we're already falling apart.
So we need to keep that glue together with art and culture and books like yours.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think that I love being a poet. And I was thinking today, I'm getting ready to, I'm doing an audiobook version. So this book is on paperback as well as a ebook. Mm-hmm. So I have it in both versions. And I made it very reasonable so people can just get it, because mm-hmm. I'd like it to go around. And my dream for this book is people will buy it or get it from the library, because I made it available at the libraries as well, and read it to others. So you might be in a place with a dinner table. Maybe this is a safe way to say something that you haven't found the ability to say, because it is artful.
So if people are interested in your book and know more about you, where can they go?
You can go to bemoreyou.net, and that's the letter B, MoreYou.net. And there's a little bookstore there, and there's a link, and you can get the book kind of anywhere. You can get it at the library. It's available on loan as an ebook. It's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, Apple Books, Google Books. It's mm-hmm. kind of everywhere. So anywhere you want to get it, you can probably find it. You might have to search around. I'm not sure how easy it's going to be to find, but you can definitely find it on my website.
And again, the name of the book is?
Dystopia Unplugged. Mm-hmm. Please Talk Back.
Okay, perfect. Anything else you want to add to the conversation?
Oh, just thank you so much for giving me this chance to talk to you. As a host, I don't get to talk about, I talk too much sometimes as a host. I always hear that when I'm editing myself down, like, Blake, why don't you just shut up and let them talk? But it's really nice to be the one who gets to talk. So thank you for inviting me on your show.
Thank you. Congratulations on your book. And hopefully we'll talk back when you have the next one coming out. Or do you have any?
The next one's going to be a little easier to read.
Thank you, Blake.
Thank you.
Next, the Willits Center for the Arts Community Calendar.
My name is Sasha Thomas. I'm the manager of the Willits Center for the Arts and the creative director for the Upstate California Creative Corps grant through the Arts Center.
Gary Martin here. I'm the curator at the Willits Center for the Arts. I'm also the Teacher of the Year, according to the National Arts Education Foundation.
A fun thing about the Willits Center for the Arts is a lot of people don't know who we are. And we have been here for 24 years. We were started by a group of people, and they started a commission. And in 2018, the city no longer wanted to run the art center, and a group of 9 women, I call them the Divine Feminine, they started a 501c3. And so we are a not-for-profit, unendowed art center, and we are member-supported. Every year we go to our community and ask if we can be here one more time. We have two gallery rooms, a classroom, and a great room, and a grand piano, and a sound system.
And you're located in?
Willett, 71 East Commercial Street, next to the Noyo Theater.
Let's talk about the programs you have.
Every month in the gallery, Gary, our curator, curates a show with two or more artists. In April, it's going to be Art Under 20. And May is a juried show.
Yeah, that's exciting. David Burton from the Grace Hudson and Lauren Madsen, who's a conceptual artist and a member of the Arts Council of Mendocino. He's a board member. They're going to judge the first round. Then the second round, one of each artist is going to go in the gallery. And then what we'll do is a People's Choice Award. Mm-hmm. So people will be able to vote on their favorite, and someone will win a prize for being People's Choice.
It's called the May Show.
Right.
Since the last time we talked to you, I think we had just found out that we received the Upstate California Creative Corps grant. And we have had about 15 free offerings to the community. And we hope to end the grant year with a bang. So on April 27th, there are a wide range of free opportunities to make art here at the Art Center with artists. So there will be a zine fest, a print fest, printmaking. There will be acrylic pouring, and there will be social justice collage. Mm-hmm. All those workshops will take place here. And then the city of Willits is wanting to have a clean canvas art project that same day. So April 27th is an awesome day to come up to Willits, to East Commercial, and participate in a lot of free art activities. There's going to be a local singer-songwriter playing live music out in the front.
How was the opportunity to work with that grant?
It's a demonstration program, and so the funding is 1 year, and it may be renewed, but possibly not. We have 19 artists and creatives. We've had art talks. We've had ecstatic dance. We had Donda de Oro come and do Brazilian dance. We had a workshop on photography led by Sandy Strong, our former president of the board. And actually, one of the people who took the course began to see himself as an art photographer and actually showed his work in our annual photography show. We had people who came to the Donda de Oro Brazilian dance workshop who ended up joining Carmen Day's Brazilian dance troupe and performing at the carnival in Willits. We are going to have a children's camp for a week in June that Caroline Hambray and Buffy Schmidt and Laura Corbin will run. It's really been a beautiful infusion of new people, new ideas. Honestly, the biggest surprise for me now so far has been the effect on the artists. Like, they are very humbled to be paid to offer their dream ideas to the community and for people to come out. A very young artist and ceramicist, Sophia Lowy, said, "Sasha, I want to do a Christmas ornament potluck." But the idea is to let them think about how to influence our community. About 50 people came out, all ages. And one thing we're finding is people who've never been to the Art Center come when you offer something for free. It is administratively a lot for us because it's the largest grant we've ever received. But we are handling it. We are doing it. And people are responding beautifully to the events.
What did you say? It's very telling. It's like when you break the barriers that people have to participate in those programs and for the artists to get compensated to do the
Yes,
program,
especially when it's free.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, that's amazing that she's able to do this, that she's pulled it together.
We use the budget to say, What would you dream about offering our community, given that we haven't had ecstatic dance here in 2 years or more because of COVID? There were 150 people in this building dancing.
We do field trips here. You know, I encourage mm-hmm. all the schools to contact us, and they can contact us at www.willitscenterforthearts.org, mm-hmm. all one word, and set up a field trip for their schools, for their classes.
What did you do on the field trips?
Field trips, I take them upstairs and I teach them, give them a lesson in art, whatever it may be, on the big screen upstairs. And then afterwards, we bring them downstairs and give them clipboards, paper, and crayons and tell them to find their favorite picture and draw it in the gallery.
From the exhibition that is...
From the exhibition that's current, mm-hmm. right. We let them know that it changes every month. And when they go to the movies, stop in, 15 minutes early and see what's going on. Yeah, I reach about 2,000 kids a month. I teach in 3 different communities in a reservation. The kids develop a new respect for art. Mm. When they look at how things change in art, from one era to the next, they begin to see how life changes, mm. how things happen like that.
Mm-hmm. You also have those programs that are recurrent.
Yes.
That happen every month. Yep. Talk about what this name of those programs so people can know.
African dance, Brazilian dance, yoga. We have a new style of yoga with Kira. It's a relaxing yoga on Mondays at 7 p.m. Deviana just restarted Qigong, which is very powerful and quite popular. We also are a place where people can express their ideas and interests. So we have a special rate for physical arts class, and that allows people who want to share something with our community to come here and get our community moving together across, in African dance, there are 80-year-old women and there are people who are differently abled in wheelchairs who come to listen to the live drumming. We have once a month, we have live drumming, African and sometimes Brazilian. We're trying to keep people's spark alive in these really challenging times for our community.
You're still offering the live drawing class?
Oh, yeah. Drawing every Thursday, 1 to 4. And
they're still going.
Mm-hmm. They've been going for 20 years here.
We were having a conversation the other day and someone was like, what's the big deal about life drawing? And Gary and I were saying that is foundational for a fine artist, mm-hmm, right? That mm-hmm. practice. These people come every week for years.
We're the only life drawing class around. I think here in the college maybe, but we're it.
I think we might be the only ones with a nude model.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard. You have to go to Santa Rosa. Hmm. They have it at the Mendocino Art Center also.
That was it.
Okay. What other events or exhibitions do you have planned after April?
Mm-hmm. We also have shows planned, for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm. Last year, Gary worked with a donor we have a baby grand piano.
Mm-hmm.
And Spencer Brewer started a series of classical music shows.
Yes.
We had the first one. We expect to have more in the summer, mm-hmm. the fall, and for the holidays.
So they were very popular, very well done. And then I have new artists that have never shown before coming up in, June, July, August, September, the rest of the year. There are a couple of artists that are known to us, Anne McGlinty and Judy Hope. They have shows also. Mm-hmm.
And then in December, it's late November, every year we have the small work show where if mm-hmm. you are a member, you can show your work in the small work show. And we also run the craft show. It'll be the 36th mm-hmm. crafts fair in the community center. That's actually a huge economic driver for our community mm-hmm. because it's artists and artisans.
And it's good artists. It's a curated show.
I noticed that you have an artist in residence.
Very exciting.
Salvador, yeah.
Salvador, tell me a little bit about that.
Salvador and I talked about what he wanted to offer this community. And he said, I'm a painter. I paint. And he decided to create a portrait. It's going to be called My Willits. And he's going to start it, but then he will finish it in this room and allow people to come in and help him paint. Mm. And we just talked about, like, what do you do when you paint? And he said, I love to listen to books on tape, philosophy, mm-hmm. and also music, like rock music. And I said, well, let's make a playlist and you play it so people can also come and we're going to have opportunities for them to paint also while he finishes his work. And he said, people aren't going to like my music and the weird philosophy I listen. I said, no, I love it. I want to hear it. I think that will be so fun. So for two different Sundays, for a few hours, he will be resident here and the work will stay here while he completes it. And then we'll figure out mm-hmm. how to display it somewhere. It's a large format portrait, which is what, you know, Salvador does. Salvador is from Guanajuato, Mexico, and he comes from a line of Mexican muralists and portrait painters. He's 27 years old. Yeah. He is brilliant. He is hardworking. He is humble and his technical.
Yeah. And again, he's extremely popular. His paintings are a knockout.
The subjects of this painting, I don't want to ruin the whole surprise, but they're people, and it's a mashup portrait of people that are meaningful in his experience of Willett.
Anything else you want to add that we haven't talked about?
Our Facebook page was hacked, so if you want to like our Facebook page, you have to like a new Facebook page, but just go to our website and the Facebook icon, and you'll be led to our new Facebook page. And at the bottom of our homepage, you can subscribe to our email newsletter. I try to send one at least once a week if there's things happening. And many of the opportunities through the Upstate California Creative Corps, they're free, but some of them have limited registration. So you want to be subscribed to the newsletter so you can quickly register.
www.willitcenterforthearts.org.
Well, Gary and Sasha, thank you so much, like always, for your time and all the information and all you do for the community.
Thank you.
You are listening to Artwaves. Coming up, Eddie Heil covers the theater bit.
Well, hello. I have the pleasure of speaking with Michael Ducharme, the director of Tennessee Williams' The Glass Menagerie, which at the time of broadcast is playing now at Willits Community Theater through April 28th. Hello, Michael. Good morning.
Eddie, good morning. It's such a pleasure to be here.
I'm happy to speak with you. I'm very excited. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and some of your theater history and your involvement with the Willits Community Theater?
Okay, I'll start. The Willits Community Theater, so my husband and I moved to the county in 1995, and the very first work that he and I made in the county was here at the Willits Community Theater. So this is going back to the late 1990s, and I directed two shows then, the Seven Keys to Baldpate by George M. Cohan, which featured a very young Dave Strock in the lead, and then a year later, when John LaFan was the artistic director here at the Willits Community Theater, he hosted something he called the British Season, and I directed a Joe Orton play called What the Butler Saw, and it was lots and lots of fun. Brian Weller, who's a local artist here in town, designed a fantastic set, and again, a fantastic company of young artists. That's the extent of my back story with the Willits Community Theater. Locally, my most sort of visible role was as the producing artistic director of the Ukiah Players Theater from 2000. And I'm sorry, from 1998 to 2002. I essentially was hired to direct two plays in UPT's 20th anniversary season. And then I stayed on in the leadership position, producing artistic director, until I left the county in 2002 to move back east to be with family. So I don't know, I probably produced 50 or 60 main stage plays during that 5-year period. I directed a dozen or so, I met Kate Magruder there, one of the founders of UPT, who has remained a dear friend and associate. And there'll be a little bit more about Kate in the next segment.
Oh boy.
Stay tuned.
Well, so you are directing The Glass Menagerie. For those unfamiliar with the show, could you give us a brief synopsis?
This is Tennessee Williams' first successful play. But Glass Menagerie, which had an out-of-town tryout in 1944, it opened on Broadway in 1945. It was his first successful play. It launched him overnight from a sort of relatively unknown playwright to arguably one of the most successful and sought after in the world. He went almost within the span of 1 week from near poverty to earning $1,000 a week in royalties from the Glass Menagerie. So a huge shift in his life, an incredibly important play. One of the reasons I chose this play is because when I was in high school, it was required reading in my high school English class. All sophomores in my high school had to read the play, and I have recently learned in the preparation for doing this play that it's still on required reading lists for sophomores and juniors in high school, even here in our very county. When I sort of zeroed in on that and then looked through the history of productions that have been made here in this wonderful Willits Community Theater, in 48 seasons, they've never done this play. And I thought, well, this is a classic that many, many, many people have read, and in the year since I announced I was going to be working on this production, I've talked to many people who say to me, oh yeah, I read that play when I was in high school. I don't remember much about it. And even people that said, yeah, I saw a production, you know, 5 years ago. I don't remember much about it. So I thought it's an important story. It was an important launch to a very successful American playwright. It is autobiographical in nature, the story. It is essentially about a young Tennessee Williams, who incidentally was born with the name Thomas Lanier. Williams was his birth name. And so one of the main characters in this play is Tom. So it is looking at Tom in the final stages of the separation from his family. He is living in a tenement apartment in St. Louis with his mother and his sister. Their father, who is still alive, is absent in the play. His portrait hangs, you know, up over the living room and it kind of looms large over the space, but he's gone. Amanda Wingfield, the mother, says, you know, yeah, I married a traveling salesman and I don't even know where he is right now. So it is about these two children being raised by a single mom, and during the Depression, actually it takes place in the winter and spring of 1937. That's basically the play. So it's looking at a young Tennessee Williams and his sister and the relationship with his mother and the circumstances surrounding his departure permanently from the family nest out into the world. It's also, you know, about the past and the influence and power of the past. In fact, one of the things that drew me to this story is that it is told from the future looking back. The very first line of the play is, this is a memory play, Tennessee tells us. He says, it's not real. This is not really what happened. It's what I remember years later about these seminal events in my life. And this production leans very heavily into that aspect of the story, which is we are looking back in time at key and crucial events in the development of this young writer's life. Tennessee Williams at the time in the mid-40s was experimenting with new forms of how to tell theater stories. Realism was something that was very popular, you know, modern realism, the Actors Theater and, you know, group theater and all of that. And Tennessee was looking to sort of break out of the standard mode of how stories were told. And this was one of the devices that he used, which is to look back in time. He says in the very opening pages of the script that this affords the practitioners, the artists that are telling the story, a great deal of freedom. You're not trapped by the literalism. You have it's expressionistic, it's poetic. And as I said, we're leaning very heavily into that aspect of this production. So I say, you know, in my program notes, which I just finished up, you know, a couple of days ago, you know, we're taking a new look at an old story.
May I ask you to let us know, tell us the wonderful cast of players who are helping animate and bring this show.
Well,
tonight.
This is, you know, the most exciting thing to me about community theater and about this theater in particular, but it, just community theater in general, is the range of people that you can bring in to this craft. It's an ancient craft, you know, storytelling through theater. And this cast, there are five actors, local, one of whom, the young woman who's playing Laura, this is her very first show. She has never performed live on stage in her life. On the opposite end of that spectrum is her mother, who is Amanda Wingfield, who is being portrayed by Kate Magruder. Back to Kate Magruder, one of the founders of the Ukiah Repertory, the Ukiah Players Theater. Kate has been making extraordinary theater in this community for almost 50 years. She's going to hate me for saying that. But most of you know when the UPT was founded, so there are no secrets here. But Kate is playing Amanda Wingfield, an extraordinary gift to this community and to this production in particular. There is the young man who's playing Tom is a local Willits Community Theater actor. He's only been on the scene for, I think, two seasons. His name is Joshua Sternberg. He's a remarkable talent. You may have seen him play Randall P. McMurtry in last season's production of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest here. He's essentially, from the moment he surfaced, he's been in just about every play that Willits has done since he surfaced a little more than a year ago. An extraordinary performance, local actor. Skylar Marcier is a name that might be familiar to those of you who attend theater productions at Mendocino College here locally. He's one of Reed's students, a former student. He is playing Jim O'Connor, also known as the Gentleman Caller, which most people remember the Gentleman Caller, even if they don't remember anything else about the play Glass Menagerie. Skylar Marcier is playing the Gentleman Caller. And last but not least is, again, another local Willits Community Theater stalwart, Aris Velis, is playing a character that I have created uniquely for this production. There are only four characters that are written in the script, and I have added a fifth, a narrator. And it is, I did that to remind the audience when needed that this is a memory play, that this is Tom. So Aris is playing a grown-up Tom who is looking back. As I said earlier in the conversation, you know, this story is not portraying something that really happened. It's portraying events as Tom remembers them, with all of the prejudice that brings. In other words, there are certain aspects of the story that he just does not pay any attention to, others that are, you know, greatly heightened given their importance to him at the time. So Aris Velis, another local Willits Community Theater actor, is playing the older Tom who comes back to tell the story. To tell us the story. So again, five incredible actors with incredible range, from first production to, you know, I don't know how many productions Kate Magruder has done in this community, but it's many, 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 many. And if you make the journey, you know, to the Willits Community Theater anytime between April 12th or 28th, you're going to see an extraordinary performance from her and from this entire company.
Well, it sounds like you have a beautifully clear runway for a beautiful takeoff to the show. Very much looking forward.
From your lips to God's ears, as my mother-in-law used to say.
Sounds like you have a lovely show lined up, and the community is truly grateful to have the opportunity to come see it.
Thank you. Thank you, Eddie.
Thank you for talking today, Michael. And, Glass Menagerie, running now at Willits Community Theater.
Thank you.
That was Michael Ducharme, director of The Glass Menagerie at Willits Community Theater. Up next, we're going to hear from the director of Through the Looking Glass at Ukiah Players Theater, Tracy Hunt. Well, I have the pleasure of speaking with Tracy Hunt, the director of Ukiah Players Theater's production of Through the Looking Glass, which at the time of broadcast is now playing Friday through Sunday, correct?
Mm-hmm, yep.
Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to me, Tracy. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your role as director with this show and your role at UPT?
I've lived in Ukiah my whole life. I started at the Players Theater 10 years ago, pretty much exactly this time of year 10 years ago, so it's an exciting like little anniversary for me. I've been here for 10 years, volunteering, being in shows, doing lights, sound. I've done pretty much everything. I said that in the newspaper interview. I've done everything but play instruments. And Jenny's going to make me do that too someday.
I directed
this show because I was talking to Jenny about wanting to do Jenny Peterman, the executive director, about I approached her saying I'm ready to direct because I was in House on Haunted Hill. Nena was the director and we're peers. We started at the same time. And I kind of watched her struggle to like step into the director role. And I was like, oh no, I think I actually have opinions about things. I think I might be able to do that. So I told Jenny I could do it. And we talked about we were looking for shows and I was like, I like fantasy and I like, you know, things that are whimsical and fun. And I like comedy. I'm not like a straight play person necessarily. Like this is a straight play, but I like things that are zanier and fun. I really love comedy. And she was going to direct Through the Looking Glass and we were trying to find something else for me to do it. And I actually was the assistant for Dothit for Alice in Wonderland. So I was with him through the entire process.
Which was last season, right?
Yes. So that was last spring in the same time slot we did that. And I was directed by Chris Dothit from the high school. And I was his assistant. And I helped with all of the movement. Like the living set had a bunch of physical stuff. I do a lot of choreography here. And so I was there through the whole process of that. And I knew that show very well. And she was like, I think you should just do Through the Looking Glass. That seems like the most natural fit. So that's how I came to do this.
Fascinating. So this story, Through the Looking Glass, the version that you're performing, that you're gifting the community, is an original adaptation, is that
yes.
right?
Yes, it is. Jenny adapts scripts and a lot of public domain stuff all the time. So we've done a lot of shows, like Repose in Action shows, were always these original adaptations. And Alice in Wonderland was as well. And so she told me to kind of think about how I wanted this one to go. And so I pondered and we ended up with something very different from Alice in Wonderland, but I think it's a good next step in our Alice's journey. It's different, for sure.
Without giving anything away, is there anything particularly unique about this adaptation that folks who are familiar with the story may be...
Yes, it's very different from the book.
Okay.
When we were talking about how we wanted the show to go, I wanted Alice to be older. I thought it would be cool to do, because Wynonna Eidecke is playing Alice again, and I thought it would be cool to set it farther in the future in her life and see what, I kind of wanted to ask, like, what would happen for an older person to be thrown back into this kind of fantastical situation, because we always have these stories of these young bright-eyed kids going into all these magical places and they're so fun and it's full of wonder and it's all magical, but we don't really get that for adults a lot. And that's something that I like particularly felt that I was like, that's such an interesting concept. Like what happens if right. we throw a 27-year-old into Wonderland instead of a 7-year-old? So that's kind of where that's at. We get an adult Alice wandering through and, you know, dealing with all her very adult issues in a very fantastical space.
Speaking of fantastical issues, what, for those unfamiliar with Through the Looking Glass, the story, could you give us like a brief sort of rundown? Like what's the deal?
Yeah, so it's pretty much the exact same as Alice in Wonderland, where there's not a theme, there's not really any like strong, poignant things going on. It's kind of just a child. She goes through the mirror. She meets fun people, and there's a whole lot of chess involved. You know, before she goes through the looking glass, she has all these chess pieces in her home. And then she goes in, and then she's in the looking glass house where everything's inverted and the chess pieces are alive. But again, it's not ever a direct, like, opposite as Lewis Carroll. You know, like, you would think if everything's inverted, things would be the exact opposite.
Right.
But they're just weirder in a different way. It doesn't make a ton of sense. So she just kind of goes on this journey, and she wants to be a queen of this chess game. That's her whole goal, is to become the queen. And she runs into the Red Queen and the White Queen. And we really liked both of those characters. Like, those types of characters were really interesting, but it just didn't quite fit for the themes that we were trying to, you know, convey. So we took all the chess out.
Okay.
So there's, like, all, if anyone's read the book, all of the chess is gone from the story. But there are nursery rhyme characters in the book. So Humpty Dumpty is in the book. Tweedledee and Tweedledum are in the book. And I think there may be another one or two characters, but we really expounded on that. So we took some of the personalities of some of the other characters, the things that they brought, like the White Queen and the Red Queen, and put them into nursery rhyme characters. So that's our little Lucy Locket and our Miss Mary Mary Muffet. Are kind of, they have those personality traits of those characters, but they're just differently. They're just portrayed differently.
It sounds like a very exciting and fresh take on this story.
It's very different. There's, like, hints of the book, but it's very different.
Very fun. Very fun.
Yeah. Which is nice to be able to do. His story is very, like, it's not very deep, so it's actually very easy to inject our own themes and our own concepts into it. It's like pretty open to that without, like, taking away from anything he was doing, because I think he was just having fun writing those books.
That's fair. I mean, and we're speaking currently in the theater. I'm looking at the set, and the set certainly looks like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like you guys are having a blast up there with the toys you have to play with. I mean, I won't give anything away, but it's a beautiful set.
Yeah, we've reused, I think we've only purchased paint.
Wow.
Paint and chicken wire and screw eyes, large screw eyes for rigging, I think are the only things we've actually had to purchase for this. We've reused tons of stuff, and we've done this method of these trees a lot, so it was actually pretty easy.
You say rigging, so there's quite some spectacle going on in this show
Yes, there's some things move around up in the sky and
very fun,
and that which we don't usually do.
Very
fun. That was
fun.
A good, you know, how do you portray going through a looking glass? What happens? What happens to your world?
Who knows? I guess we'll have to see. This is Through the Looking Glass at Ukiah Players Theater. Open now, running through the first weekend of May?
Yes, it closes May 5th.
Thank you for talking with us, Tracy.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Our Waves. If you missed part of this show, or if you want to listen to our archives, visit our website, kcyx.org. If you are an artist, musician, writer, or any kind of creative person and want to be in our program, send an email to victor@kcyx.org. My name is Victor Palomino, and I'll be back with Mari Darling the third Thursday of every month for another episode of Our Waves here in KCYX, Mendocino County Public Broadcasting.